The Podium Game Podcast Division previews are rolling on. I'm Brian Gibberman, joined by Jared Dubin. Jared, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Good to be back.
And this week, we will be doing the Northwest Division. We're going to just rotate one Eastern Conference, one division from the Eastern Conference, one division from the Western Conference. So that brings us to the Northwest Division. Same thing we did last time. We'll do a quick profile, look at lineups, rotations, reason to be excited, reasons to be worried, and storylines, and then anything else that comes to our head as we go. We'll start with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Their profile went 59-23 last year, lost in the Western Conference Finals to the San Antonio Spurs in six games. Head coach Scott Brooks, he's entering his seventh year with the team. Offensive rating 108, that was 7th best in the league. Defensive rating 101, 5th best. Pace 97.91, that came right in the top 10 at 9th. Jared, with this, let's jump right into the lineup because we got Durant, Westbrook, and Ibaka. I think those are locked in. The other two are open, and I think I know the direction you'll go with one of the spots, and I completely agree with you, so I'll let you go there.
Yeah, I think that Reggie Jackson has to start next to Westbrook in the backcourt. Is that what you thought I was going to say?
Exactly.
Yeah, they were, you know, I tweeted this out earlier, so I guess it will be, by the time this runs, it'll be yesterday. I wrote a story for Bleacher Report about two point guard lineups. Westbrook Jackson was the best two point guard lineup by net rating with at least 100 minutes played last year. Worked well offensively and defensively. They played, I believe, 500-something minutes together. Let me just double-check on the number real quickly to make sure. Just, you know, because I don't want to be talking about a lineup that barely played together, but I believe they played a whole bunch of minutes. It was... They played 395 minutes together, which is a... It's not a huge amount, but it's fairly significant. So it's not like they just played 101 minutes and they just made the cutoff. They were one of the higher usage two-point guard lineups in the league last season. They both scored and defended very well. And I think it's fairly clear at this point that Jackson's the fourth best player on the team. And obviously you want to have some scoring punch off the bench, but I think for this team, you want to just beat teams into submission. Like, they have enough talent that they can put teams away early and often if they use Jackson in the starting lineup.
And then you could also stagger your minutes, so Westbrook or Jackson, one of them is your first guy that comes off the court and they come back in and anchor the second unit. So it's not like you can, it's, they're going to play all their minutes together. They could still be split, or you could do something with Durant and have him come out early. I mean, with the three, with Durant and Westbrook, one of them should be on the court at all times, so there's no reason they can't get scoring out of their second unit anyway.
Right, although we know Scotty Brooks doesn't exactly subscribe to that theory. Even in the playoffs, there were times when either Durant or Westbrook was not on the floor. And I also think if Brooks does what I think he's going to do, which is start Kendrick Perkins at center still, because of his post-defense, and because of Perkins' general surly disposition and the fact that if he doesn't start, he'll likely cause some problems. I think that if you then start Andre Roberson also at the shooting guard spot, you again have two offensive minuses in the starting lineup where players can just completely ignore them on the offensive end of the court. So I think it'll either be, or it should either be, Jackson or Jeremy Lamb. And I like the dynamic that Jackson brings with his off-the-dribble skills more than the possibility that Lamb reverts to shooting very well like he did in college as opposed to how he did for the second half of last season.
I'll throw in Anthony Morrow as an option I could see Brooks going with also.
I don't know. He's been very reluctant to play offense-only players at any position, and that's kind of the mold that Morrow fits. Obviously, they signed him for a reason, and he'll have a role, but I don't know if it'll be a starting role.
See, and what you just talked about with Ibaka leads right into my reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. And in this one, they're both linked. Reasons to be excited, they have enough big depth that Perkins could be completely removed from the rotation. Reason to be worried, Scott Brooks is the coach who might refuse to remove Perkins from the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I think that at this point, Steven Adams would be ready to start. Obviously, he's a little bit foul-prone, and he's not necessarily as good at the fundamentals of defense yet as Perkins is. You know, Perkins has slipped from his point where he was one of the best defenders in the league, but I think he's still probably more sound and solid defensively than Adams is just yet, at least if we're going by last year. Adams improved on that end throughout the season, and, you know, he's obviously more athletic. His timing will get better. He's a better, not necessarily a rim protector, but a better shot blocker already than Perkins is. But I think Perkins is more able to handle, you know, the really good post guys like a LaMarcus Aldridge. Perkins did a really good job on him in their matchups last year. Those are the kind of guys where it's good to use Perkins. But I think against almost anybody else, Adams is a better option on both ends of the court. Perkins is a complete non-factor offensively to the point where it's laughable. Adams at least has some pick-and-roll skills. They could both set screens. Obviously, they have Nick Collison there as well, Ibaka. Perry Jones is sort of a front-court Swiss Army knife type guy where you can use him in a lot of different roles. And I'm not sure your thoughts on the Michigan man, Mitch McGarry, but I like him. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, there's a really small sample size of what he did in the college ranks. He did not play a ton of minutes and really didn't get unleashed till the NCAA tournament. When he did and he was given more freedom, he played very well. I'm hesitant to put so much stock into six games, but Michigan was clearly better when he played and he helped them jump a level. And I think how he plays, he's more skilled than people give him credit for. He's a somewhat decent passer. He can shoot. I think he'll be able to make mid-range jumpers in time. And I do think there's a role, and when I'm saying Perkins doesn't have to play, I think that's including 8 to 12 minutes a night from him to give him a chance to start growing into what he can eventually be.
Yeah, I like McGarry. He brings a level of versatility that most of their front court guys don't have, with maybe the exception of Collison, you know, in terms of being able to roll or pop on pick and rolls, pass from the high post, set on and off ball screens. He's going to have to work at it defensively, you know, just like Adams will. They're both young guys and they're both athletic, but not necessarily the best with the timing and the rotations and things like that yet. I think that that will be a good center combination for them in the future, though, because Adams is more of the power guy and McGarry has not necessarily the finesse, but more of a well-rounded, versatile game. You know, whether they are the center combination this year, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Perkins will still get minutes. I think it's fairly obvious if you paid attention to Scott Brooks over the last few years that he's going to play Perkins. Not necessarily a huge amount of minutes, but at least 15 to 20 a game.
And to what you said about McGarry's versatility, to Beeline never ended up doing it between the injuries and just that Michigan very clearly was at their best playing basically four guys can handle the ball and then a center. But there was consideration to playing him at power forward a little bit, that he could shoot well enough and handle the ball well enough that they could get away with playing a center and him at power forward for stretches. They didn't end up doing it, but just the fact that he thought about it shows that he's more skilled than maybe people give him credit for.
Yeah, I think if McGarry, I think the guy for him to model would be Josh McRoberts, just in terms of offensive development, like learn to step out a little bit more so he can be a little bit stretchier. But then he's already got other skills that I don't think McRoberts necessarily has, like in terms of rolling to the basket. McRoberts is more of a pick-and-pop guy, and then he's going to look to either shoot it, pass it, or work the ball around and, you know, to get it back to a guard. I think that would be a good model for McGarry to follow.
Yeah, I actually like that comparison. Storylines. The Scott Brooks stuff is old and tired. I think that's been beaten enough with.
Yeah, especially by me. I've beaten that into the ground on many different websites.
Yeah, so as I've grown as a sports fan, one thing that I've tried not to do is that your season is a failure unless you win a championship. I think there's varying levels of success that you should enjoy and be able to take in and be like, all right, that was a good season no matter what. But I think this is one of the unusual situations where when you have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka all on your team, that the championship or bust mantra is fair with this team?
I think it's fair, but I'd also think that you shouldn't consider the season a failure if they go to the Western Conference Finals and lose, or go to the Finals and lose. Like, that's still a really good season, but I also think that they, as a team, should have the championship or bust mentality. Like, their goal shouldn't be to get back to the Western Conference Finals or just to make the finals. It should be to win the whole damn thing. They have enough talent to do that. And, you know, just quickly to touch on Brooks again, I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he's a good coach. I just think that he's sort of gotten as much as he's going to out of this team, in terms of he's crafted one of the better defensive systems in the league, and at this point, another coach can keep that, and they can defend the same way at the same level just based on the personnel they have on hand. But I think the coach that would inject more creativity and options built into the offense would take that, could and would take them to another level. You know, whether, you know, Brooks has done a little bit of that with each passing season, in terms of putting more different options off of the same base plays that they've had. But I think something that has more consistent versatility in the offense could take them to another level, even as they've been one of the better offensive teams in the league over the last few years. But you see in the playoffs, when teams know their options, like Memphis last year, Memphis was really able to screw up their offense for long stretches of the game in the first round of the playoffs, because they just knew exactly what was coming and where the ball was going to go. And I think if you had more different options built into each play, that it would be able to take them to another level. And that's where my Brooks stuff comes from. Not out of any assertion that he's not a good coach, because he is. He's a very good coach. And he's helped Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka develop into the players they are. I think that's undeniable. But I think he might have taken the team as far as it could go under him. Sort of like Doug Collins in the early Jordan years. You know, he helped Jordan reach the level he got to. He helped that Bulls team get to the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row. And that was a really good team, and he was a really good coach for them. But I think that they needed someone else to take them up a level, and I think the same might be true of Oklahoma City.
I know your, like, wet dream scenario for them was Stan Van Gundy. Now that he's been taken up and swooped up by the Pistons, is there another guy you like that can come in and do that?
Oh, man, you put me on the spot, and now I'm so unprepared. I mean, there's not any specific guy. See, my thing on coaching searches is that you should never zero in on any one guy. You should cast the net as far and wide as possible and let any candidate sell you on their vision for the future that jives with whatever the general manager or the president or the owner's vision for the future is. So it's not any one guy. It's someone would have to sell me or sell Sam Presti, really, on a better vision for the future. And that guy may not be out there now with Stan off the market, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't see what's out there.
For example, say you're the University of Michigan. You shouldn't hire a Michigan man instead of Kevin Sumlin because he has a Michigan man thing. You should cast your net wider than that. That's what you're saying, right?
Or the Lakers shouldn't hire Byron Scott because he used to be a Laker. They should hire someone who's going to actually get a team to play defense and not just talk about it.
Well, in the Lakers' sense, I don't really think it matters who they hired as a coach. So if they have someone who can go in there and just take a beating for a couple years and then not cost themselves someone who they actually like, it might have been a strategic move to get someone that wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Like, I say that half joking, but it does kind of make sense on some level. All right, Portland Trailblazers finally made it back to the playoffs last year, 54-28, beat the Rockets in six, lost to the Spurs in five in the second round. Terry Stotts is entering his third year with the team. Their offense was tremendous last year, 108.3 offensive rating. That was fifth in the league. Defense was mediocre, 104.7, 16th. Pace, 97.48. That came in 10th. Their lineup, Lopez, Aldridge, Batum, Matthews, and Lillard, played 1,373 minutes together last year, second most in the league, plus 8.5 net rating. Very good. Do you think they can play to that level again?
Yeah, I think that it's a lineup that makes a lot of sense together. You know, they had the Aldridge-Lillard pick-and-pop stuff going on. Matthews and Batum spotting up and attacking closeouts. Lopez is sort of the garbage guy on both ends, cleaning up in the paint. It's a lineup that makes a lot of sense, and if they all stay healthy, I think it'll be a very good lineup again.
Did they do enough with their rotation to help the team make a jump on the back end? We got Will Barton and Steve. Their two big additions were Steve Blake and Chris Kaman. So, I mean, though Blake, I don't think Blake's as bad as he was last year. I think he's a suitable backup point guard.
I agree. I like Steve Blake as a backup.
And so basically you're looking for internal improvement from some of their younger guys for this team to be able to make a jump. See the C.J. McCallums, the Thomas Robinsons, the Will Bardens, and the Myers Leonard of the world to see if this team can improve.
Yeah, I think, you know, we discussed this on an earlier podcast, that this was the most likely Western Conference team that made the playoffs last year to not make the playoffs this year. I think you have to remember that at the start of last season, this was not a team that people thought was very good. It was something of a concern whether LaMarcus Aldridge was going to push for a trade. Obviously, he's already said, you know, before the start of the season that he's going to opt out at the end of the year and sign a new 5-year contract. If they struggle, that may not happen. I think they're still good, but I think you have to be concerned about them defensively. This was a team that, at the start of the year, was just destroying people on offense from three and with Aldridge and the mid-range and things like that and Lillard. But their defense was not all that good. You know, Nick Batum is a guy who has long been seen as someone who could become a lockdown-the-wall-dang type defender, and he's been solid, but he's not necessarily been at that level yet. Aldridge still struggles a little bit defensively. He's solid, but he's not, you know, sort of like Batum. He's a solid defender, but not great. And then Lillard's defensive struggles have been well publicized. I think he got a little bit better on that end last year, but when you're repeatedly getting beat at the point of attack, that's something that breaks down the rest of your defense. They played very, very, very conservative defense last year. I think they forced turnovers less than almost any team in the league. They'll have to step that up to make improvements defensively this year. I'm curious, though, what do you think about, I think that the defense is clearly the biggest question mark, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. Here's the thing, I really like their complementary players. Lopez, Matthews, and Batum, I think, are exactly what you're looking for out of your center and your third and fourth options on a very good team, possibly even a contender. It really, for me, it comes down to Aldridge and Lillard. And I think Aldridge is what he is at this point. I don't really see him, I mean, unless he develops an amazing three-point shot, I don't really see him, his creation skills or handle getting much better. So he's going to be the player he is. It comes down
to... And just to be clear, that player is very, very, very good and someone who can anchor a top, you know, five offense.
Yeah, and that's what I sound... Like, I'm a negative LaMarcus Aldridge person, but I'm not. What I point out is that people are calling him a top five player. Jason Whitlock, after those first two games against the Rockets, went on PTI and called him the third best player in the NBA. That's what I'm speaking out against. I'm not speaking out against him being an excellent player, because he very clearly is. But how good this team can be, and if they can get to from 54 wins in second... in a second round in the West is, can Lillard make a jump to that next level as a complete player, and can they make improvement on defense?
Yeah, I think that the defense is more, not necessarily more important, but I think the Lillard improvement, at least offensively, continued improvement is somewhat expected, and, you know, his defense will get better with time. I think that the team defense and forcing more turnovers and not fouling as much, and not necessarily, you know, I think they rarely fouled also last year, but just stepping up the aggressiveness on defense, I think, will help them a lot, just in terms of forcing turnovers and things like that. And I think that that's going to be, again, not more important, but more of a factor in if they take the next step as a team.
Couldn't they do something like that by getting a little creative with their matchups, maybe using, like, Batum on the point guard a little more, have him use his length to to go out there, pressure, and hide Lillard a little bit. I don't know, maybe they did that a bunch last year, but I could see that as a way to kind of generate some more turnovers.
Yeah, they played with matchups some last year. You know, they have Matthews and Batum where they could mix and match different things. And yeah, the Blazers did force turnovers less than any other team last year. 12.2% of the time. It's the lowest in the league.
And Lillard has good size. It's not like, so it's, you can put him on a two guard. It's not like he has to guard the smallest guy in the court. So they have versatility to get a little creative there.
It's certain two guards he can match up with, I think. And it's good that they have size at both wing spots too, with Batum and Matthews.
Yeah, it's they're kind of the Raptors of the Western Conference for me.
That's a pretty good comparison. I think most people will not like it because the Raptors were so new last year, but the Blazers were too. And it's a team where they could easily be in the upper half of the West, or they could be in the lower half of the playoff bracket.
All right, we kind of mixed in reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried, storylines. We kind of mixed that all in one there. So we'll just move along to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm going to do the profile last year. It's a completely different team. I'll just roll through it real quick. 40-42, Flip Saunders, back first year, round two with the Timberwolves. Offensive rating, they were top 10, 105.6. Defensive rating, 104.1, 13th. They played really fast, 99.82. They were fourth. Completely different team this year. I irrationally love this team. What about you?
It'll be fun to watch them. I mean, they're not going to be good, but it'll be fun to watch, you know. Rubio and Wiggins and Brewer and Shabazz and Chang and Peck and Young and Bennett. There are a lot of guys with a lot of different varied skills. And if they had a coach who wasn't Flip Saunders that was, you know, more creative and willing to experiment with things and not, oh, we're going to try to make the playoffs without Kevin Love for some reason, I'd be a little bit more excited.
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but...
No, they're not going to come close to making the playoffs.
But I think they'll hit their over. I think it was like 25.5 or something like that. I think they'll hit that. Pekovic, Young, Rubio is an interesting three to start with that I like. If Wiggins plays... I think Wiggins is a rookie that's going to take a little bit of time to get to where he needs to, so I'm not banking on this, but if he can kind of overachieve a little than what's expected this year, you bring Jang off the bench. They got some guys. Bennett showed to be a little bit better. They still have Corey Brewer. Mo Williams is a decent backup point guard. Ronnie Turioff is a decent backup center. And there are some pieces here that are somewhat reasonably decent.
They're one of those teams that's sort of stuck between two plans, I think. You know, Thad Young and Kevin Martin and Pekovic are sort of one plan, where you're trying to be a solid team that could possibly make the playoffs. And then Anthony Bennett and Andrew Wiggins and Rubio and Shabazz, Glenn Robinson and Zach LaVine are another plan, where you're building around these young guys for the future. And Alan, you could throw Chang in that mix too. It'll be interesting to see which team wins out in the end. I think I know what it should be, but I'm not necessarily sure if Flip Saunders agrees. I think the really interesting thing here is Rubio. You know, he was probably the most highly touted point guard prospect of the last five or so years, and it hasn't exactly worked out that way yet. He's obviously, you know, a genius-level passer, and he's a much better defender than anyone gives him credit for. But his shooting is so off the charts bad as to render him not nearly as effective as someone of his skill set should be. And it'll be really interesting to see whether they can hammer out a contract extension and what his ceiling as a player turns out to be, you know, based on whether or not he ever develops even a passable shot.
And what happens is, if he can't shoot, it just makes it, you can build a good team with him, but basically the four other guys on the court all need to be able to make threes to create the lane so he can dribble and do what he needs to do for creation purposes.
It's not like Rondo, where he doesn't have a jumper but is good finishing in the paint. Rubio is terrible shooting from everywhere, including around the basket.
Yeah, he needs to get better offensively. I wish they had. Here's the thing, the Thad Young thing. He's only 26 years old. So if this team peaks in 3 years, and I would re-sign him and have
his contract is done at the end of the year. And I don't see why he'd want to stay on a team that's going through another rebuilding project.
I'd say it's based on what he sees in Rubio and Wiggins long term. If he thinks those are guys that you can build a winning team around, and he understands it's going to take 2 years, but he believes in them, I could see him going back.
Yeah, but even then, though, by the time a guy like Wiggins hits his prime in 4 or 5 years, Thad's already going to be 30, 31.
Which is there's still time for him then. I mean, that's old, but it's not 35, 36.
He'll be exiting his prime by the time Wiggins is entering his.
Yeah, I agree with that. Are there any of the young guys that you could see making a jump on the being good on this team? The Muhammad, Levines, GR3s, or any? Is there any of them that you Bennett? Any of them that you especially like?
I like Shabazz. I think that he got a bad rap with the age thing. He obviously didn't show much last year, but I mean, I know muscle watch and all that nonsense, but if you look at the pictures of him in camp, he looks like a completely transformed person in terms of his body. And he's one of the few guys on the roster that's able to shoot from outside, or at least he could in high school and then a little bit in college as well. Certainly better than Brewer or Wiggins or, you know, some of the other guys in the wing. So if he can take step as a shooter and just come in and hit threes and things like that, it'll be a big element for that thing.
Yeah, they could use it as they're trying, in a context of trying to win games, they could use Budinger to be healthy. He does some things that could help them also.
Yes, agreed on that, but his health is what.
Reasons to be excited, dunks.
Yes, so many dunks and alley-oops.
Someone brought up this point with using them as a league pass team that it's going to be cool for a little bit, but there could come a point when they get bad that you'd get over it. So it wouldn't be – I'm not sure. It might have been Matt Moore who did this on his EO, whatever that podcast is he does with Zach Harper. I forget what it's – Ion Basketball.
Ion Basketball.
Yeah. That – but like – 45, 50 games into the season, it could get a little old.
Yes, I would agree with that. Especially if they have some injuries, it could get a little bit old. But it's a good division to watch, you know, between Oklahoma City and Portland. And even the next two teams we're going to talk about, even if they're not necessarily all that great, are fun to watch, I think, and they have some fun players to look out for.
Worried, you already hit on this a little bit. So you really don't like Flip Saunders as the coach of this team.
For this particular mix of guys, no. I mean, Flip he's been a very good offensive coach in his career, and his teams in Detroit were really good on defense too. But just in terms of he's the coach and also the general manager or the president of the team, and I think he's going to be too stuck in the we want to be a team that tries to make the playoffs mold. To give guys like Wiggins and Levine and Shabazz and Jang and Bennett the kind of minutes that I would probably give them if I were coaching the team. Although, you know, who would ever want me to coach their team?
I think you should coach the team. That'd be kind of fun. Then I would know an NBA head coach.
Well, that would be the one positive of me coaching an NBA team, but I think that there would be many, many, many more drawbacks.
I don't really care about the drawbacks. I just want to know an NBA coach. I'd be happy. Major storylines. I think the biggest one here is, and you've been one of the people who have really stuck up for him, is how good can Andrew Wiggins be this year? I know long term you really, really love him. A lot of the stat projections aren't a big fan of him. Why do you lean towards what you see with your eyes versus what the numbers are saying about him going forward?
Well, I think that all of those numbers are based on his production in college, and he went to Kansas. And if you look at the history of guys at Kansas, Bill Self is a great college coach, and that team is good every year, but his system has also been shown to sort of hold guys back in terms of their individual production. And he wasn't necessarily put in the best position as an individual player at Kansas to showcase the different things that he could do. I think if he had gone to Duke or UNC or even Florida State like he was considering, his numbers would have looked a lot different. He would have been put in a lot different positions, especially if he had gone to UNC and been running the floor all over the place. And I think that his numbers would have been a lot different and the stat projections would like him more.
That is a very, very good point.
Just sort of that kind of athleticism on the wing. And, you know, he's not going to be a lockdown defender right away. No rookies are. But I think he'll be a guy that within the next 2 or 3 years can develop into one of the better wing defenders in the league just based on his size and his lateral mobility and his wingspan and things like that. He'll be a guy that at least defends very well. And then if you can get him out in transition enough and get him working on cuts off the ball, he'll have enough time to develop his jumper to the point where he can be, if not necessarily a great offensive player, a good offensive player, and then at that point it will become about developing his off-the-dribble game. And I think that that'll be the last thing to come, but if it ever does, then he could be really, really, really good.
And the off-the-dribble game isn't a complete loss. He already has a spin move that he uses very well off the dribble, and he can make, it's weird, he's better at a step-back jumper when he's using the dribble versus spot-up. So there is, it's not like everything on the offensive end in the half-court set is at a complete loss. There are things he does well.
He's not a complete zero like a Tony Allen offensively. He's got more skill than that. And, you know, he's so athletic that he can make plays that don't necessarily appear there at the moment he catches the ball.
The vision and passing, I would say, is my biggest concern with him going forward.
Yeah, I would, you know, somewhat agree. I think he needs to add some strength, too. He's very skinny. You don't want him to get pushed around and off his spots on offense. But it'll be interesting to see how he develops. I went on record multiple times saying that I thought that he should be the number one pick, you know, regardless of whether Embiid was injured or not. I think that he has the highest floor of the guys that were available at the top of the draft, because I think at the very least he'll be very good on defense, and then someone who can score you points just with his athleticism and transition and off cuts and things like that. And if he develops more offensively, will just be really, really, really good.
Going from one team that disappointed last year to another, the Denver Nuggets, they went 36-46. Brian Shaw's entering year two as his head coach. Offensive rating 103.3, that was 17th in the league. Defensive rating 105.4, 21st. Pace, they played at the third fastest pace in the league, 100.68. Lineups, rotation, a lot of interesting stuff here. This is a really, really deep team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just in terms of last year, the thing that hurt them more than anything else was injuries. You know, Gallo was out the whole year. I'm not the biggest fan of JaVale McGee, but he was out most of the year, too. Lawson missed some games. Nate Robinson missed some games. This was a team that never really had their full rotation together. Wilson Chandler missed a bunch of games, too. So it's going to be a completely different team on the court this year. And then, of course, they made the move for Aaron Aflalo, too. It's going to be interesting. I think to start, I think Lawson, Gallo, Fareed, Aflalo are sort of locked in. And then it'll be, you know, the McGee-Mozgov combo at center. They have a lot invested in McGee dollars-wise, but I think that Mozgov is just a better player. It'll be interesting to see what they do at that spot.
I'd even go as far as saying that Darryl Arthur might be a better player than McGee.
Maybe.
He's sound. He does nothing special, but he's sound defensively. Like, I remember when they played in Phoenix, and I was at the game, and you watched the team when Arthur was on the court compared to when it was Fareed and Hickson and whoever else was healthy at the time, and I don't think they were really playing Mozgov yet, and it was just like, whoa, are they better defensively when Arthur's on the court? It's scary to... It was like they shouldn't be this much better when that guy is playing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because you can see with McGee why people think that he'll be really good. There are things that he can do on the court that nobody else in the league can do. He's just so athletic and so tall at the same time that he's, again, he does things that nobody else can do, but he just doesn't have the refinement on either end to be a consistent enough contributor to the point where he should be getting a ton of minutes.
With the depth they have at shooting guard, I mean, you got Randy Foy there. They drafted Gary Harris. You have Quincy Miller, who's a young kid. Do you think they should maybe try and move Foy to open up some time for Harris and Miller, or do you think those guys aren't ready and they should stick with Foy?
I think in terms of this year, Foy is probably a better option than either one of those guys. I like Gary Harris. I think he'll be eventually be pretty good. Sort of kind of a guy that's somewhat in the mold of Foy, actually, where he can handle the ball enough to be sort of a combo guard and run the offense for stretches and then just be a good shooter as well. I think he's strong and he can attack off the dribble. But I think that Aflalo is going to soak up so many of those shooting guard minutes for now that it might not make a difference. And I don't know how much you'd really get for Randy Foy and what they would target even.
It's a weird roster. One of my reasons to be excited for this team is them getting Gallo back. The most interesting thing about Gallo is he kind of developed in a way I never expected. His three-point shooting finally bounced back last year. I think he shot 37% after two down years. But
he was out all year last year.
Two years ago. The last time he played, I was saying he shot 37% and he bounced back from three after two down years. But he became a good defender, and he also gets to the foul line a shit ton, which were things I never expected when he was a rookie with the Knicks.
Yeah, he's one of those players who just moves in a very herky-jerky manner, and it confuses guys off the dribble. You know, not exactly the same, but somewhat in the same mold as Paul Pierce, where he just moves differently than other guys, so that he gets fouled a lot because of that. You know, and just, you know, working angles and things like that. His foul drawing is a big key, obviously. So he'll get minutes at both the three and the four, I think, for them. And then, you know, him and Wilson Chandler playing together on the wing, I think, is always interesting. But the problem is when you do that, then Fareed's not on the court, and he's their best rebounder, best hustle guy. It'll be interesting to see how they sort out. It's such a crowded wing, like you said, between Gallo and Chandler and Aflalo and Foy and Miller and Harris. There's a lot of guys that can play a lot of different positions in there. It'll be interesting to see how it sorts out.
And that leads right into my worry with the rotation. It's Brian Shaw. He thought it was a good idea last year. I know they had a ton of injuries, but Fareed and Hickson played 1,000 minutes together. They were a negative 5.5 net rating. He's going to have to find time for Hickson. I'm assuming he's going to want to play Fareed over 30 to 33 minutes a night. It scares me that I could see him playing those two together again, even though they should never be on the court together.
The problem is that you don't want Fareed to play with Hickson, and you don't want him to play with McGee. So who are you going to play with? You know, at that point, it's either he's got to be a small ball center, or you play him with Mozgov a bunch. And you don't necessarily want to play Mozgov 30 minutes a game either. It's an interesting balancing act. The Fareed thing is interesting to me. He looked so good in the very little FIBA World Cup game I watched.
I couldn't do it. I pretended like I was going to get into it, and then it started, and I was just like, this does nothing for me.
I watched very, very little of it. But, you know, just from the reports and the box scores and things, you could see he was sort of dominant there. The thing is, though, he's dominating against guys who aren't in the NBA and aren't NBA-quality athletes and things like that. And it was sort of set up for him to be able to grab every rebound. You know, last year towards the end of the year, and Zach Lowe wrote about it at Grantland, he added, you know, some versatility to his post game, had like this sort of quick one dribble hook shot moves and things like that, using his speed to get around slower guys. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues. He's never going to be a guy you can build your offense around, but if he becomes a more functional post player, that will especially help with the way that Brian Shaw likes to play.
I kind of, and it's against Shaw's DNA, but I do kind of like the idea of him as a small ball five with, like, Gallo, Chandler, Aflalo, and Lawson. Like, that group will be awful defensively. in a half-court set, but maybe they do things, do some three-quarter court stuff, press a little bit, and just try and really push the pace of the game and play crazy fast. And you do that for 6 to 8 minutes a night, that could be something that's fun.
I love it. That's like the exact kind of lineup that, you know, gets right into the kind of things I like. And I like the idea of pressing with that lineup and maybe playing sort of a half zone. I think it would be a real interesting thing to see, but I also think that that is not something that plays into what Brian Thaw likes to do, like you said.
Yeah, no, I don't see him doing that at all. Which brings us to the final team in the division, the Utah Jazz. They went 25-57 last year. They have a new head coach, Quinn Snyder, first year. He's a guy who's been all around, done college, done some stuff in the NBA. The Jazz's offensive rating last year was 100.6, that ranked 25th. Their defensive rating was 109.1, 30th, worst in the league. They played extremely slow, 93.57 pace, that was 26th. What does Quinn Snyder bring to this team?
He is someone who was on the NBA coaching radar a while ago when he was the head coach at Missouri, but then he had sort of a scandal with college students that, you know, knocked him out of that for a while.
What did he do? Did he sleep with a chick?
There were pictures of him floating around with coeds, not sleeping with them, but I think he was like drunk at a party with coeds.
It wasn't Jerry Jones,
if I remember correctly. That's completely off the top of my head. I think that that's what it was. But he then wound up going into scouting departments and player personnel and assistant coaching, and he was an assistant in Atlanta last year, and he was very highly thought of. I think it was a good move. He's a very creative coach. I know that in Atlanta they liked him a lot. I think it'll be good for their offense, and, you know, depending on what sort of things they imposed defensively, it can only get better than what they were last year defensively, which was a disaster. I think especially on offense is going to help them.
So when you look at the rotation, I think the three guys you lock in are Trey Burke, Gordon Hayward, and Derek Favors. Not really sure where they're going to go with the other two spots. As much as I love Dante Exum, I don't think you want to start him right away. I actually think it might make more sense to go with Rodney Hood right off the bat, that he might be a little bit more NBA ready, the other rookie they drafted.
Well, I think Alec Burks is going to start.
Are they going to start Burks? I really like Burks as a player, but I would kind of rather have Hood's shooting next in the starting lineup and then use Burks as more of an anchor for ball creation in the second unit.
I think that guy in the second unit is going to be Exum. You know, this is just off the top of my head, just what I think will happen. Although, you know, then you have the two rookies anchoring the second unit, Exum and Hood. But I also think that Cantor is going to start at center. I think that that's sort of a well-established thing.
No, so you don't think there's any chance they go to Gobert with Favors? You think it's 100% Cantor?
I think it'll be Cantor.
You're asking the wrong person. I'm the worst person at pronouncing names ever.
Rudy
so.
G, I think.
there we go.
Yeah, I think he's going to wind up coming off the bench. But that's sort of those three guys and Trevor Booker, I think, will be the primary guys getting front court minutes. Obviously, the offense is going to be built around Hayward. Probably Burke pick and rolls. Favors is a fairly good dive guy. Cantor's a little bit more versatile than Favors is on offense. This is a team that it's just a weird place that they're in, because they have a lot of money committed to Favors. They wanted to build around Favors and Cantor as sort of their future. I think Hayward's pretty clearly the best player here. They have high hopes for Burke, and then Burks is sort of, he could go either way. I like Burks a little bit, but not as much as maybe some other people do, and then they just drafted Exum. So they have three very similar backcourt players, I think, in those three guys.
I like Burks more than Burke. I really like his game. I think he can continue to grow and end up being a very good player. I don't know if I like... I thought Cantor and Favors together was going to be something I liked going into last year, and I don't think I like it anymore.
Well, they have to get more consistent defensively, and I think that having sort of a defined way that they're going to do everything will help with that. Hopefully Snyder can implement something that's better than whatever this team was doing on defense last year. Gobert or Gobert, Rudy, whatever. Hopefully he can develop into a presence in the middle. He's just a massive, massive human. So if he can play sort of Hibbert-style defense where he hangs back and smothers anything that comes into the paint, that will help, especially with the second unit defense. Favors already is just very, very athletic, able to sort of move around, defending pick and rolls, things like that. Him and Cantor need to get better at their communication on defense, I think, and having a defined system will help with that. But then their perimeter defense needs to improve too. Burke was not good defensively last year. Hayward's defense slipped under the weight of having to handle so much on offense. But I think with a more equitable distribution on both sides of the ball will help them out.
Those are reasons to be excited. I mean, it should go unsaid, but I'm going to say it anyway. They have Steve Novak and Torrey Murray.
Yep, that's our former New York Knicks great Steve Novak, I think, is the proper way to refer to him.
And the greatest backup point guard of all time that never got a chance is the proper way to refer to Torrey Murray.
Yeah, I don't think Murray's going to see a whole lot of minutes here without injuries, but he's someone who, if you want to just pressure the ball, throw him in there for a few minutes a night and let him try to harass guys. But I think the biggest reasons to be excited here is Exum, right?
Yes, if we're being serious. I was going to save that for storylines, but we could just move that up here. He came out in Summer League, and he was basketball Twitter's man crush. From what I understand from reading, he kind of tailed off as it went along. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I was only there for the tail end of Summer League when he wasn't as good as early on. I like him, though. He has great size, 6'6 point guard. I think that's something that helps early on, because he'll be able to see passing lanes that might not necessarily present themselves to other kinds of point guards. I think it'll help him to come off the bench and play against second units. And, having shooters around him, Rodney Hood, Hayward was not a good shooter at all last year, but I think if you take some of the on-ball responsibility out of his hands that he had too much of last year, he can go back to being a better shooter. Giving Burke different options directly in front of him, Exum, different options directly in front of him early on will be really important. Just the, easy passes, and then he can use his court vision and things like that to do things that other guys probably couldn't. I like him. I have high hopes for his future, and I think that being sort of the third guy in that guard rotation right away will help.
The thing I liked about Exum and the little I've gotten to see out of him, and it's what really jumps out, it's kind of Rubio-ish. He's not as good of a passer as Rubio, but he has a very good feel for the game on the offensive end. He sees passing lanes that are hard to see, and he just understands how to play offensive basketball with when he has the ball in his hands, and I think that's a very good skill to have.
Yeah, it's the times when he's off the ball that are going to be the question mark. From what I've seen, he doesn't have a knockdown jumper just yet, and teams will sag off until he proves that he can make outside shots, and that might be a problem when him and Burke play together. I think that when he plays with Burks or Hood, that he'll be the guy handling the ball. But they're going to want to play Burke and Exum together some, at least, I think. But his size will help defensively, I think. And if he can show instincts cutting when he's off the ball so he doesn't always have to be a shooter, that'll help him as well.
My reason to be worried is one of my Michigan guys, Trey Burke. He shot 38, his splits last year were 38, 33, 90. He struggled shooting again in Summer League this year. He struggled shooting in Summer League again in his Summer League as a rookie. So we're going on three sessions of games now where he hasn't been able to shoot against NBA-level talent. And that's something I really, if he does that again this year, it's a real concern.
Yeah, he was a good shooter off the dribble in college.
Yeah,
was one of his big attributes, was his ability to make pull-up jumpers out of the pick and roll and step-back threes out of the pick and roll. That was one of the things that made him a a player of the year candidate at Michigan. And I think that from the 90% free throw shooting, you can see that he's still got that shooting touch. You know, you don't shoot 90% from the line if you're a terrible shooter. Knowing more about how guys are playing him and not having to force things as much, I think will help. Having other ball handlers on the court more often in Burks and Exum, I think will be able to help him also. It'll be interesting to see whether he still struggles shooting off the dribble like he did last year. And he needs to get better at finishing in the paint.
Yeah, and as that's why his ability to shoot and run the pick and roll was why I thought he would fit in the NBA style game very well. It's one of the easiest transitions when you go from Michigan to the NBA is that, as a point guard, is that you run a very NBA style offense where it's all pick and roll and pick and kick outs. That's what the offense is generated based on. So I didn't think the transition would be that difficult for him.
I think that the lack of a shooting big man may have played somewhat of a role in it, because guys were sort of jumping out on him, which didn't let him make the pass to a rolling Favors or Kanter, and also made the shot right away more difficult. So I think that that might have played a role.
And that's a good observation to something. Hopefully he gets better. That's one kid I'm really rooting for to do well.
Yeah, I think that he will get better as he learns the angles more and how to sort of use hesitation dribbles to create more space for himself and maybe draw the defender out another step so the passing lane presents itself in a more way. And then, one guys will hang back a little more and allow more space on the jumper. It's the timing is something that he needs to get down, and I think he will.
Who do you think finishes higher in this? Oh, wait, we're not doing... Never mind. We're saving predictions. That was going to be a prediction-based question. I won't do that. All right, we're going to be back with another Eastern Conference division next week and an Upper Division. I was trying to look up which ones. My computer is freezing, so I won't be able to do that. Just stay tuned. That wraps up the North Division game podcast preview.